host this week's Devil the Detail podcast. I'm Rob Paxton, and I'm here talking all things. So for a Devil's Jump of the show this week, as ever, we've got Paul Parkin. How's your week been, mate?
Yeah, it's been a good week. It's been a very good week, following on from, obviously, the news of not losing our head coach, which is wonderful. Then we went into the weekend. Great win for the men's team. Great win for the women's team. I finished booking off my trip to Lorette, so that's happy. We had the Supporters Trust AGM last night. That was good. And I spent today washing Folly Lane Ladies Masters team shirts. So they're hung up now. So I've had a busy little period, to be honest. I've come through it unscathed. But yeah, no, really good week this week. It's a great time to be a Red.
Yeah, domestic god as well. Washing up, cleaning, doing everything. It's we should all inspire to be yourself, Parky, moments like this.
Well, I've become the I suppose it's the official Folly Lane Ladies kit washer.
That's it.
Following in my mum's footsteps for Salford for 30-odd years. So I've had a good teacher, so I seem to know what to do. I must have picked something up while I was there in the changing rooms. Yeah, no, they come in a massive bag, get dumped here. So, and I know, I think that those ladies are, I think they're playing at half-time in the Wigan Catalan game on Thursday, which is a bit unusual. But I've had a great week. I'm glad to get that Lorette thing sorted. I've been in an hour in which hotel, what flights and everything. And then I spoke to a travel company. I won't name them for advertising reasons, but they did me a great deal. They looked after me really well because obviously, you know, there's other issues that I need looking after. And yeah, so I'm dead excited now. She said it was something like 70-odd days and I nearly fell apart. I was like, what? Can't wait. So a few hurdles to get over yet for us, but it's nice to have something to look forward to.
Late night at work for me Monday. I had a special vermicelli to celebrate the late night. Went to work today. Nothing exciting, really. So, yeah, it's been quite a come down after the good win at the weekend for both our men and our ladies. We've got all the big news coming out of the club this week as well. And then we're going to preview all the games this weekend with our ladies in the nines and Paul Rowley's men away at Huddersfield. So, we'll start with Salford Devils win at home to Warrington.
You're listening to Devil in the Detail, and this is your big match review.
So, Salford Devils were victorious against Warrington Wolves at the Salford Stadium. They won 17 points to 12. Parky, tries from Tim Laffey, Joe Mellott, and an obstruction try by Ryan Briley was enough Paul Rowley's men to secure the 2 points.
Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. I think of all the teams we get to beat occasionally, I think Warrington's probably the one I get the most satisfaction from. Just, you get with Wigan, you get with Saints, the big clubs, they always have been. Warrington have this thing about them that they think they're probably bigger than they are. And I think we brought them down a peg or two again, which is always nice. Brilliant performance, really was. I didn't feel under threat before the game. And I said last week, my prediction was that we'd get beat. I thought we'd get beat by about 8 to 10 points. I thought they were, I mean, you looked at the size of their pack. It was huge compared to ours. And then they've got a lot of pace out wide. And I was really worried about that. But I thought Paul Rowley and his boys got the tactics spot on. We just, the first half was a bit up and down. Both teams had a bit of a go. But I thought the second half, I thought we just controlled it. I didn't feel threatened by them at all. I thought we just snuffed out all their main players. Obviously, Williams he's a great player. The first half, we give him a bit of space. Second half, shut him down. Warrington lost all direction, I thought, and didn't have an answer to us. And I think in the end, I know it's always great to get a win. It doesn't matter if it's by one or 1,000. It's still 2 points. But I thought we could have won by more, or felt that maybe we should have done. But no, brilliant, great performance. And we came through a bit of adversity, losing King Vuniawa early on. I said they've got a big pack and we've got to rely on certain players to do big, big minutes. And the boys really, really stood up. There were some amazing performances. And I don't think I realised how good some of them were till I came back and watched it later that night. But it's easy on the day. You look at the flash stuff, the Tim Laffey try and things like that. And you think, wow, yeah. But the actual grunt in the middle of the park was magnificent.
Yeah, it was chalk and cheese after the game. We had Warrington, Sam Burgess and all the Warrington staff all walking around mopified, looking really sad. And you had Paul Rowley and all the Salford people behind the scenes high-fiving each other and fist-pumping as he walked past us the corridor. So, yeah, big win. Great win. Important win for me. Just quickly run through the timeline. Salford scored first. Tim Laffey, lovely break, 40 metres. Run through three Warrington players to score. Great start for Salford.
Yeah, he's got some power in that handoff. Bit of the Chris Wellham in there, I think. He bounced them off, but it's not just that. He's got the intelligence as well to spot that gap in the first place and see where the players are. But, when he went through, I'm thinking, they're going to get him now. And he's just bouncing off him. When you see it back, they literally did bounce off. It wasn't even, they were making big attempts. And that big hand came out. He's so strong. We know what he's like anyway when they're trying to tackle him. He's always coming out of tackles and two or three men are going in. You try and stop him one-on-one, you're in trouble. And it was a great way to start the game for us. He was all the way through the game, him and McDonald in them centres, a real, real handful. But it was a great try and a great way to start the game for us.
Yeah. I don't want to be that guy, but the three Warrington players all went high on Tim Laffey. You know, Tim Laffey, fantastic offload, always able to sort of bounce off the first tackler. I think if you're going to go and tackle Tim Laffey, you don't go up top on him. That should be the basic rule. You hear it a lot when he's playing the opposition shouting, a lot of offload, so they know what his game is. But yeah, we still needed scoring, still needed to run 40 metres to do it. I think, like you say, fabulous try. Got the momentum going for Salford, though. Unfortunately, we weren't hit back. Try for him, James Harrison. Nice run by the post. Cut through the Salford defence and went over for the score.
A little bit of weak defence, I will say. It was a disappointing try to give away that because I think we'd contained them fairly well. And a straight run off a prop forward, he shouldn't be dancing through like that. It was a couple of weak efforts. I think a couple of players were retreating too slowly from the tackle before and we're just off balance and you start reaching and grabbing at shirts. You're not going to stop someone the size of Harrison. I mean, he's a bit like his dad in that way. He's a big, powerful guy and he's getting better. He's a player that I really like, actually. So it was a disappointing try to give away. But when you watch it back, you see that we're just retreating a little bit. I think we'd lost contact in the tackle before. They got a quick play the ball away and players are just out of position. But disappointing, but you're not going to stop teams scoring tries anyway. Not constantly. So, and against a team like Warrington, who've got players like that, it was an unusual try for us to concede, but disappointing. But you've just got to, you know, we had to regroup and come back.
Yeah, Warrington scored again. George Williams with a score, followed his own kick, reached over the shoulder of Ryan Briley and got the ball down in the corner.
Yeah, I think Ryan, if he had his time again, would have just smacked that into the south stand and not even thought about it. I think he was waiting for the bounce of the ball to go out. It's a risk. Not really worth taking in that way. But, I mean, full play to Williams for following it up. He could have thought it was going dead and he didn't. And a bit like the Alan Hunt try in the 2003 final against Lee, that reach round. And you think you're just anticipating the ball going out when it's that close to the dead ball line. However, I will say, I know the coach's thoughts on this as well, that if the referee sends that up as a no try, it definitely doesn't get given. There's no clear footage of him grounding that ball. But the referee did give a try. That's the rule. I'm not having to go to the referee in any way. That's the rule. He's not seen it. But he's said try. He's standing upstairs. It's going to be given as a try. That was how it was going to be. I think that Paul Rowley mentioned it in his press conference afterwards, and he mentioned it last night, that perhaps the video footage we get over here in this country isn't good enough at the moment. We're obviously a lot further on than we were last year and the year before, but you watch it in Australia, how clear it is. As soon as you see you get every angle and it's in perfect clarity. Over it, it was a bit fuzzy. You couldn't see the ball go down. The referee's only got one shot. Benefit of the doubt to the attacker, and I appreciate that, and that's fine if that's the way it's going to be constantly. So I don't think, if he sends it up as a no-try, it's a no-try. He sent it up as a try, it's a try. But again, another one that was probably avoidable by just getting rid of the ball, getting it off the island. But again, I'm sure next time that ball's bouncing, Ryan sticks it out of play. Simple as that.
Yeah, I suppose it's a difficult situation when you're sort of being kicked to and you're in the ball. Never trust the rugby ball's bounce. It can bounce towards you, it can bounce away from you. And that's what the kick's all about, is trying to tempt you into either kicking it or fumbling it. And then if the chase is good, then you get rewarded. And, you know, the chase was good by Williams. He reached over and scored. Salford it back. Try from Joe Miller. Does his way over from the play of the ball by the posts, and Salford were level.
Yeah, I thought Joe was excellent the other day in a position that's not always, you know, his thing. I know he can grow into it, but he's such a clever player. He spotted the gap. He knew what he was doing, and that's what all good hookers do, even though he is more of a sort of halfback. But yeah, he was really good, and he did well to get the ball down because there was a lot of bodies in the way. and he forced his way over. And again, it's one of them you think, oh God, is he going to give this? Is he not going to give it? But then when you see it back on, as soon as you saw it on the screen, you could see he managed to ground it. Great effort from him. An important time. If Warrington had scored next, could have gone away from us a little bit. But like I say, I mean, the lads wouldn't deserve that. We really stuck in it. And we built pressure there. And Joe was smart enough to take advantage.
Yeah. So in tough games, in close games, there's only one man who makes the difference. Max Need popped up with a drop goal to take Salford into half-time, 11-10 up. We call him the Iceman. He switches on in pressure moments, and that's what he did.
Yeah, all them years of experience. Just oozing out. I spoke to Paul Rowley about him last night, and I sort of praised Mark a lot. And seeing how his game has come on, even from the time at Hull to where he is now, I think he's a better player now. More controlled, more all-round as a leader. And he knows the tempo of the game, what needs to happen at what point. He's looked at the clock, seen that there's, you know, what, 40, 50 seconds left or whatever, and thought, well, we've come away with a post for something. We're going in the lead at half-time. Doesn't matter if he's 1 point or whatever. Psychological edge just before half-time. Yeah, I mean, I thought Sneedy was magnificent. Again, I know he had that one kick that went straight dead, but other than that, I thought he had a great game. Really, really, just a proper leader on the park. What you want from your scrum half. Yeah, a great timing. And he hits it well because it wasn't an easy one. It wasn't just under the post. It was a little bit of a distance there. But yeah, good to see it sail over.
Yep. So second half, it was a real tough contest. Both sides trying to open each other up. Really sort of good defensive stint from both. Warrington kicked a penalty to put them back in front. But then Salford scored a try. We'll call it an obstruction try for Ryan Brayley. A lovely break by Ninny McDonald down the line. He kicked inside. There was Chris Atkin there. There was Ryan Briley there. Ryan Briley gets clobbered trying to ground the ball. And the referee goes to the screen, Parker.
Yeah, well, one thing to mention there was Ninny McDonald's chip inside. He made the break. He had the control and thought to chip that ball, not anywhere, not just hoof it and stick it dead. He chipped inside where he knew bodies were coming up. He knew there was support inside. Place it in that area. Anything can happen. Like I said before about with Ryan and George Williams, that ball could go anywhere. It bounced favourably, went into the end goal, and Ryan was there like he will be, backing up. And it definitely, I mean, Danny Walker's grabbed him and pulled him away from the ball. He's scoring a try if it doesn't happen. So, yeah, you can't, I mean, McDonald's part in that try. Can't be overlooked. I think he's a wonderful player, and we're absolutely so lucky to have a guy like him. Just picked him up from Australia again, fell out with the game, whatever, and he comes in. He's an absolute superstar, and that's them smarts. That's instinct. That he just knew what to do and where he needed to put that ball. Some players would have just hacked it anywhere. It could have gone dead. It could have just skewed off his foot, but perfectly placed, bounced, and you know Danny Walker had no option really. Ryan was going to score anyway, so he might as well try and disrupt it.
Yeah, obviously going to the screen, came back as no try, but yeah. Then the ref gave a try. So yeah. I don't know whether he pressed the wrong button or whether the on-field referee overrules the video referee for the score.
No. What he's done, he said there's no try because we haven't grounded the ball.
Hmm.
That is a no try. The referee has already said, penalty try. He's looking at if Ryan had got his hands on it in the penalty in the incident of scoring the try, but he didn't score the try. So that's when it's a penalty try. That's why it's not an 8 point try.
Yeah.
At the same point, it's a different rule. There isn't a foul committed as he scored a try because he hasn't scored a try. He's gone to score a try, and that's where the penalty is. So he's just checking that he didn't ground it and he didn't have to give an extra 2 points for a penalty try. So it's just no try on the field for that, but there is a try. I mean, the Sky commentator said, oh, I think he's pressed the wrong button. No, he hasn't. That's not the rule. That's not how it works. So I don't expect Sky commentators to know an awful lot, but yeah, so at the ground, I know people around me were like, what, why was he saying no try? Surely he's pulled him back. And yeah, but just wait a minute. He's not giving it on that. He's giving it the fact that he hasn't actually scored a try. That is no try. Whereas if he'd have grounded it, even though he's being pulled back, could have been an extra penalty, an extra 2 points on top.
Yeah.
Not the case. So he's judged on the no penalty, no try. But yeah, again, just, I will say, I thought the referee had a good game the other day. I really did. I thought he let things flow. He wasn't picking up on someone's got the hand on the ball, the play of the ball, and slowing it down, six again, there was none of that. He kept both teams back. I mean, people around me were screaming, they're offside. Well, they're not like 15 yards back. They're just creeping up when the ball's played. It's not a problem. Thought he had a really good game. He could signal better. That's another one. I've had that a few times now this year where they give a penalty and you're going, well, what's that for? It's not, that wasn't one of these back to one things, an actual penalty. You're going, well, I'm not really sure what he's done. But that was both sides. And I just wanted to praise the referee. I thought he had a really good game. And I've seen him a few times this year. I think he's probably one of the best ones we've got.
Yeah. I think, obviously, people get caught up in the emotion, don't they? Yeah. I was screaming for an 8-point try because I thought he's being fouled in the act of scoring. But he never touched the ball, so he never scored. So there's no foul committed if you don't touch the ball down. So I suppose, it's only a 6-point try rather than 8-1. Yeah. But it would have been better with an 8-1 to give us a bit more cushion. But unfortunately, we only got 6, but the 6 is all we needed.
Yeah, well, it would have been, wouldn't it? Because it took the game out of their reach, really. It was always right up to the end. I said to the guys around me at the time, when it was 11-12 to them, I said, if we score next, I'm not convinced we'll win. If they score next, I'm pretty convinced they'll win. Mm. That's how I felt at the time. I just thought we've had that much, we've done that well that I could see it being snatched from us. It felt a bit like that. And when he scored, I thought, if he'd have given the other two, then I'd have been confident. Mm. We'd have gone that extra score ahead. And then every time we got the ball after that, I was thinking, just nail a drop goal. Just make sure it goes to extra time, if anything else. Let's just stay in this game. We don't deserve to lose. But fortunately, I thought we were just in control anyway. I thought we controlled the ball really well. We stopped Warrington playing. Their big men stopped making metres. And our guys up front. I mean, it's easy to praise Sneedy and Laffine, McDonald, people like that who do the flash stuff at times. Them lads in the middle really got stuck in the other day. And when we lost Big King, it was always going to be difficult. You wouldn't have known it. You'd have thought they were the man down until they got that bad injury. And that was a shocker. I wish that lad all the best because it happened not too far in front of us and we saw it straight away and we all went, I'm not sure his leg's supposed to be that way. So, I wish him a speedy recovery because he was having a great game and all that kid. But, I thought overall, I thought we just controlled the whole game.
Yeah, just an update on the Warrington player, Leon Hayes. He suffered a fractured dislocation of his ankle and will undergo surgery this week. But it was impressive. I thought he was pretty good throughout the game. And obviously, it's a big injury. He's got youth on his side, so hopefully we'll see him again in the future. Talking about our players, like you say, King V failed his head test, went off. Like so, Jacques Ormerod stood up for me. So, tremendous amount of work for him. Oliver Partington as well. Andrew Dixon was sensational, I thought, as well. And, it's games like that where, like you say, Parker, you put all that effort in and previous Salford teams get it snatched from them. But this one, under Paul Rowley, know how to see a game out. And they did that against Warrington.
Yeah, very much so. Well, you mentioned Jack Orman right there. He was one of them. When I got back and watched the game later that night, I didn't realise the work that he got through and the devastating running he was doing. I mean, he was knocking them all over the place. At one point, he put that Philbin on his backside and Philbin had to go off. He hit him that hard. He was brilliant, Jack. He looks like he's possibly getting back to his form of a couple of years back. I thought Gil Dudson did well in his spells on the park and all. I know it's against his team, if you like, which I found quite ironic when he came on and they booed him. But, yeah, I thought they all really did well. Andrew Dixon, like you say, special mention for him. He's not played much over the last couple of years, but the last few times he's had to come into the team, he's been brilliant. Excellent performance. But, Jack Ormerod, wow. But I mentioned to... I've said it on here before. I mentioned to Paul Rowley last night about this. We've got to get used to this attitude that we're not used to this. We're not used to turning up at games and thinking, we can win today. We'll beat these. Why are we worried about going to play Warrington or Saints or whatever? We're a good team. And as fans, we've got it in our psyche that Salford don't beat Saints. We don't beat Leeds. We don't beat Wigan. We come off a hammering or whatever. And I think it's about us adjusting as well as fans. The surprise that when we do, when we're still like, oh my God, we just beat, why would we be surprised? The players aren't surprised. The players are turning up every week thinking we'll beat these today. That's the attitude they've got. And speaking to Paul Rowley last night, that's exactly what he was saying, that they don't think that way. They're not interested in the history of what's gone on and what kind of club we are and where we've been. it's who we are now. Mm. And as a group, and beating Warrington now should be seen as, yeah, we beat Warrington at home, so we should. We shouldn't get beat at home. Should beat everybody.
Yeah.
And then we go away with, you know, renewed optimism. We can turn anyone over, and it's refreshing. And we need to reset, I think, as fans, more than the players do, and start with a bit more confidence.
Yeah.
Me.
Talking about Paul Rowley, the tactical decision to put Cade Cust on the bench and Chris Atkin at half-back with Mark Snead kind of changed the game a bit, really, for me. I thought, obviously, with Atkin and Snead, you can go either side of the ruck, both intelligent players. People have said that they think that Cade Cust would be a better hooker than a standoff. I'm not too sure about it, but when he did come on, he was busy. And it, you know, shows Rowley knows he's able to find these gems, aren't he, and change them around.
I've said that. I think you know I've said that. I think he's a hooker and not a standoff. I don't think Cade thinks quick enough as a standoff. He's got great hands and a really genuine, good, decent player, but I think he's a better hooker. And then last night again, Paul Rowley said that he is a hooker or a loose forward. He could be. He said probably the best part of his game or one of the strengths is his defence.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the future for him. But yeah, I mean, Paul Rowley's looked at that game and thought, what do I need? They've got Danny Walker and Sam Powell as hookers coming on and off. Both really good attacking threats, speed from the player. We need somebody to counter that. And that's what Joe Miller did. And I thought, I mean, Chris Atkin, we could talk about him forever, couldn't we? He's just an absolute superstar of a player. He'll play anywhere, whenever you want. He'll put his hand up and go. But half-back's his position. He knows the game. And I thought he worked really well. And I think it's a tactic that Rolls will probably stick with.
Yeah. So let's look at the stats, Parker. Meters for the teams. Salford made 1,245 meters. Warrington made 1,092 meters. Salford made 274 tackles. Warrington made 344. Salford's completion rate was at 84. Warrington's was at 78. Salford made 9 errors. Warrington made 11 errors. And Warrington missed 42 tackles and Salford missed 36 tackles.
Right, well, I thought there were that many missed tackles to me. I mean, there was errors. There was plenty of ball spillage and stuff. But that's that kind of game. You get nervous and things like that. And you maybe try and force an extra pass or whatever. A couple of our mistakes came into play, the ball as well. I think Timmy Laffey was guilty of a couple of them. But yeah, good start. Especially first of all, the meters. Making nearly 200 metres more than your opposition. He's always going to put you in a good position. And defensively, having to do less tackles than the opposition, you've got more in the tank when it comes in games like that and it's late on. Especially when, like say, you've lost a player and one of your key forwards. Really, really good. Really got an 84% completion again. I think we average that most weeks, don't we? 84, 85. When it drops below, we get a bit surprised. I think that was probably the most disappointing thing about the London game, certainly the first half. We were down at 50-odd% or something. Like, that's not Salford. And despite that, the way we play, we do have roly ball, if you like. We do keep the ball alive. We do throw it out because we haven't got the forwards to take teams on up the middle. We keep it alive. So you'd think there'd be more errors and less completion, but that's not the case. And it just shows the skill levels that the players have got.
Yeah, funny old game, rugby league, I think. Obviously, like you say, with roly ball, they like to move it and they will make errors, but then they'll go and do it again. But they do it this time, and there's no sort of doubt, there's no self-doubt in what they do. When previous Salford teams, they'll make an error one week, and then it opens up the next week, and they don't do it because they remember they didn't do it last week. So this team, I'm sure he has some kind of hypnosis going on in the changing room where just forget about last week, we'll go again, and they go again. I'm convinced there's something going on. Talking about individual stats, top tackler Tim Laffey, 14, Mark Snead, 19, Callum Watkins, 27, Oliver Parkinson, 27, Shane Wright, 35, Jack Ormond-Roy, 26, Andrew Dixon, 15, Gil Dudson, 26, and Joe Mellor, 35.
Wow. Mm. Wow. Joe Mellor. He was good going forward and in defence, obviously. That's a lot of tackles for a guy, especially of his size. He's not a big man to be putting in. But sure, I mean, that's the role of a hooker, isn't it? You're in the middle and that's what you're there to do. And obviously, you mentioned they're right as well. I think we've got the same sort of confidence in Shane Wright or in himself at the moment due to that injury he had last season and the year before. I think he's just getting back to that. But that work rate, he's one of them players, and we've said it, you know, loads of times about coaches in the past who've said that you need players like that who you don't notice. You don't know they're there until they're not there. And that's when the problems start. And we've had that, obviously, we're missing Sam Stone the last few weeks. The other players have really stepped up, and Wright's one of them. And that's, what, 35 tackles again?
Yeah.
That's a lot of work, a lot of work against, again, a bit, you know, a lot of big men just to keep getting up and having another go. I hope he gets back to, you know, that attacking threat that he was a couple of years back. Oh, we can get back to that, but his work rate alone gets him in the team.
Yeah. Top meter makers, Nenny McDonald, 162, Tim Laffey, 139, Dion Cross, 109, Olive Partington, 113, Jack Ormond-Roy, 122, Callum Watkins, 90, and Ryan Brayley, 84.
That's good. A lot in the hundreds. Mm. A lot. That's good. I mean, Cal just falling short. Again, he's mentioned in everything, by the way, Callum Watkins again. I thought he's offloading the first half where Ryan Brayley went through as well and probably should have finished the set better, but that the way he got his body through the line and got his hands free to offload the ball, that's just class. I'm sorry. I know I've gone about him, but he just is. But yeah, the meter's there against a really good team. Let's not forget how confident Warrington were. I think they'd lost one in, what, eight or something. They were flying. After what they did to Saints the other week in the cup, and we're punching holes in them. And again, like I say, with a prop down, that's they're magnificent stats. If you carry on like that, we shouldn't be worried about making the six at all. We should be looking higher because they're unbelievable against a really good team.
Mm. Average gains, Nenny McDonald 9, Tim Laffey 8, Ethan Ryan 8, Jack Ormond-Roy 9, and Gil Dudson 8. I think obviously we talk about gains. I think it shows sort of how we play because the likes of Nenny McDonald, Tim Laffey, Ethan Ryan will be getting the ball early in the set. So they'll be making meters and getting us on the front foot. And then you've got the likes of Jack Ormond-Roy and Gil Dudson who are making 9 and 8 meters average when it needs to happen down the middle.
Yeah. I think Ormond-Roy, like you say, he really punched some big holes in him the other day. And they were putting two or three men on him every time. And he was still going forward. His post-contact meters must have been massive. I mean, we're lucky with McDonald and Laffey, two centres of that power to bring the ball away from your line when you need it. It's what we lacked the last few years when we said we couldn't get out of our own half. We didn't have meter makers like that. And now these two are they just eat them up for fun, don't they? I mean, McDonald, every time he gets the ball, two or three men are going in. He's just not, it just doesn't stop. So it does set us up nicely when we haven't got a big pack. We need players like that to you know, hopefully get us on the front foot, get us going. Quick play the ball. And then, like you say, the likes of Ormond-Roy and Vuniawa when he plays and Dudson can come off the back of that and make bigger meters.
Yeah. Carries, Oliver Partington, 21. Callum Watkins, 15. Dion Cross, 18. Tim Laffey, 18. And Nenny McDonald, 18.
Partington again, showing up in all the stats. It seemed to me, because he dropped the ball twice, I think, in collision. And I said, funnily enough, to my brother today about that, and I said, it's funny because he's one of them players as well that you only notice when he's not there. He's a really good player, Ollie. I know there's talk of maybe he might move on at the end of the year or whatever his contract's up. But whatever, he'd be a loss because he's a really talented footballer, really is. And his work rate is unbelievable. So, another great effort from him this week.
Yeah. Like you say, you've got your engine room. You've got the likes of Wright, Oliver Partington. I thought, like you say, Jack Ormond had the best game I've seen him in a long time. And I think, remember that last season, we spoke about King V at Leeds having the game of his life and he kind of carried it on. I'm tempted to say the same to Jack. This is what we expect now. This is base camp now. This is where we go. So we'll see what happens. I thought it was sensational, me. And, you know, and especially, I would say, with King V going off as well. Extra responsibility for him. And he didn't shrink. He grew, which was important.
Yeah, I think... Obviously, it looks like now that last year Jack just wasn't right. Whether it was an injury he was carrying or whatever, the Jack we're seeing at the moment is the one we saw 2 years ago that gained him like a 3-year deal, and we were all singing his praise and thinking, could he make some kind of international bench or whatever? He was getting to them kind of levels, and then last season it really dropped off, and I think now it just shows that clearly he was just not right, not fit, or even mentally not right. You don't know what goes on with players, but he turned up every week. He kept having a go. There was games where he wasn't getting on the park, even off the bench, which was which was odd. But obviously, Paul Rowley and his team know the players better than anybody else. And he's come back fresh, and every week now he's getting better and better. So, if, like you say, if we can carry that on for the year, I think we get, you know, hopefully we get a few more bodies back, big bodies back in that pack. We could be really dangerous.
Yeah. Big thanks to your 3-word man of the match reports. I said funny old game, McDonald. Richard Morton, fantastic team spirit, McDonald. Ryan Wilson, Rowley's Red and White Army, Ormond Royd. Chairman Bob, don't wire again, Ormond Royd. Matt, another close game. Lafayette, Atkin, Nenna McDonald. I want to pick one, though, Matt. Jeff Whitlow, another team effort. Watkins, Penny Lank. Andy Lancashire. Penalty try, Joy, Neen McDonald. Mark, big defensive effort, Jack Ormond Royd. Ben Wheeler, big defensive effort, Ormond Royd. Andy Smith, Paul Rowley's Red and White Army, Ormond Royd. Trev the Red, pack one game, Ormond Royd. Pete Brady, Rowley inspired whim, Ormond Royd. Colin Wilson, pride, passion, commitment, Ormond Royd. Natalie Taylor, owner's shirt special. You like the shirt? It was nice, Parky, I thought, especially in action.
We looked unbelievably smart. It was, yeah, as soon as we walked out, I think we also went, like, those little looks. Yeah, I mean, we can wear them as fans, but we don't, most of us don't have that physique that them players have. And you see them come out in it, and we went, wow, we look special. I think it's an outstanding shirt, by the way. And yeah, and obviously Natalie there mentioning she was one of the models for it on the promo. So yeah, well done to her, because we've sold God knows how many of them. According to the driver that dropped it off at our house, he said, is that your new Salford shirt? And I looked and thought, how does he know? He said, I've got hundreds of them on the van. So yeah, so we've done a good job there.
Yeah. Anita, Squeaky Bum Time, Ormond Royd. Paul Whiteside's mate, Roy Ellaby. Dickie Ticker Time, Ormond Royd. Luke Beck Ross, always there, yeah. Alan Bowles, absolutely fantastic, brilliant. And Steve Crane, 19 rounds left. So yeah, seemed like Jack Ormond Royd collected the Man of the Match award from everyone on that. Obviously, fantastic performance. It was only going to be one man.
Yeah, and I think he's looking at it. I think it's the first points he's got this year in our Man of the Match poll. So, yeah. But I say it every year. It's strange. You don't realise till the end of the year. People pick up points here and there. And it usually catches you out, somebody. And Jack could be that man. He took that pack on the other day. He took the leadership role that we needed. Obviously, Gil Dudson being sort of on and off a little bit with time, because he still needs to get fully right. We had no Singleton, we lost Funiawa. Somebody had to lead that pack around, and he was the man. He put his hand up, and they're the performances that we want to see off Jack, and rightly a man of the match with everybody else. Not sure I agree with the sponsors on the day. I've got no problem with the Sky man of the match, by the way, and Ethan Ryan. I thought Ethan had a great game, but I'm not sure Ryan Briley was man of the match. But I can only presume the Briley family were picking man of the match this week. He did okay, but yeah, there was other candidates out there. I think they were probably better, but yeah, it's all opinions, isn't it?
It is. So fantastic win for Paul Rowley's men. Let's move on to our ladies. They were in action this weekend against Alton at the Salford Community Stadium. Pitches outside and won 16-14. A late winner by Emily Bagley secured the victory for Mike Grady's ladies.
Yeah, great win. We mentioned last week how big this game was going to be. That Alton were going to be probably one of the top challengers for us this year. If we're going to do anything, and we got off to a great start in the league. And this was going to be a real, real test. And so it proved. A real sort of nail-biter again. A bit like the men's game in that way, but even closer, even tighter. And the girls, I don't know, you'll run through it, but had to come from behind to win this. And that's never easy to do, especially against a good team. But yeah, they're just showing real character now, aren't they? And hopefully this is the start of a big rebuild.
Yeah, Demi Jones out injured. I bumped him through on Saturday, saying, oh, for tomorrow, going to be a big game. She was I'm out injured. And I felt my face go white as a sheet, thinking, well, if you're injured, what happens then? But luckily, Emily Carlisle and Michelle Davis came in. Both tremendous players, both led by example. Obviously, when you lose one, you start to twitch a bit. When you bring two in, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, very much. And obviously, Demi, we know how important she is for the team. She's like the one constant, I think, that we've had in the last 2 or 3 years. A goal kicking alone can win you games, which, funnily enough, this weekend was evident in other ways. Yeah, it's always going to be a big loss when you lose key halfback anyway. And then you get a new partnership coming together in a game like that. Anything could happen, go wrong. You just miss timing, something not clicking. But clearly, as the game went on, they developed a bit of a partnership.
Yeah. So looking back at the game, Salford built pressure early on. Summer Harris nearly went over in the corner. Frantic defence from Moulton stopped her from scoring. But Salford did score after 23 minutes. Alex Simpson kicked to the corner by Michelle Davis. Spectacular Wigan bounce. Bounced straight back where it came from. Alex Simpson jumped above the defender, picked the ball up and crashed over in the corner, and Salford led.
Yeah, just before that, there was some great movement, great ball movement out to that left wing. We created a bit of space and like you say, a bit of mayhem, and they didn't really know which body was going for what, and then they put the kick in. And then from then on, and we've mentioned it about in the men's game, that the ball can go anywhere when it does that. And generally, as a Salford fan, again, this is going back to that attitude change that I need to get. It goes elsewhere for us and into the opponent's hands. Not this time. But you've got to follow it. You've got to be clever with your kicks as well. There's no point someone putting a smart kick in and then everyone standing and admiring it. You've got to get after it. Put their player under pressure. Make them make mistakes as well. Make them make the wrong choice. You know, they see two or three bodies coming towards you and you're on your own. You've got a decision. You're going to look after your own welfare or the ball, where you're going to go. And just little decisions like that. But the girls obviously chased up and went over in the corner.
Yeah. Unfortunately for Salford, though, just for half time, Alton scored twice. Short side move, Parker. Defence not quite alert to the threat, and Alton scored.
Yeah, it happened a couple of times in the game. I think we got caught out with numbers, not numbering up, not talking. I think that was part of the problem, or communicating loudly enough. Maybe I don't know, but when you've got a team like Alton, you've got to be bang on. You can't leave space. You've got to get your communication right. And we didn't. We left gaps and they exploited them. And they will. Good teams will. And it's showing that character, though, how you come back from that. And we'll learn from that. We'll learn from our mistakes. We'll watch them videos and we'll see where we went wrong and which player probably needs to pick up where. And the other thing is that I noticed was that bodies were getting tied up in a tackle. Again, a bit like what the men's team have done recently, where we've lost contact and two or three people are in that same tackle and not getting away quick enough. You're short of numbers. And the opponents, like I say, good teams, will find that out. And they did. And to be behind at that point was a bit of a blow, really.
Yeah, just at half-time, Alton found space on the outside and went into half-time. So for trailing 8-4.
Yeah, and that's the thing then. It's how you get back from that disappointment. I said about Mark Sneed's drop goal earlier on, about it didn't make a massive difference to the scoreline. But it was a psychological thing to say that, well, we can do this, we can edge this, we can keep going. Doesn't matter what you're going to throw at us, we're not going anywhere. And when a team scores just before half time, it changes a lot, especially for the coach. The coach has got a plan there. He's thinking, right, we're in this. This is where we need to go. Now we've got to get back in the game and then win it. And that's difficult to do. And sometimes trying to win a game twice as well is really difficult. So it's about attitude at that point and what the coach says and whatever he said. Clearly worked, but it took a while to do so. But it was a real, real arm wrestle. You just don't want to concede before our time. That's when you've got to stay switched on.
Mike Grady said to me that everyone was quite calm at half time. There was no panicking, there was no screaming and shouting. They knew what they needed to do. We talked about completion rates as well, that they're going in the right direction, but they're not quite where they want to be. I suppose it's important. Any level of rugby league, it's about completing your sets and getting in positions in it, and the Grady way do like to move the ball wide, and I suppose it's a mixture of making sure you complete but don't overplay.
Yeah, the same can be said for the men's team.
Yeah,
it's exactly what we do. It seems to be a bit of a DNA in the club at the moment, how we're going to play the game. And I mean, it makes for entertaining rugby. I'll give that a bit heart-stopping at times, but yeah, I think, and that's the key, I think what Mike said there as well about staying calm half time, not panicking, not worrying about it. And against a good team, you can sometimes get away with it against lesser teams, perhaps. You're going out and think, it's okay, we can get this back together. But you've got to just stay positive and just do what you've trained to do and stick to what we know. And clearly, they did that.
Yeah, I'd rather have a Grady way and Rowley ball way of rugby league rather than five drives and a kick, which we served up in sort of the early 2000s. I'd rather experience this than that, especially with about 5 pints inside me anyway.
Yeah, the Sean McRae way. Yeah. Not exactly brilliant to watch, unfortunately. trying to be percentage rugby, but if you haven't got the ball, there's no point. So, yeah, we're being spoiled these days. I think that's the truth. And I think, like, I went on last week, had a bit of a rant about the London game, people complaining that we didn't blow them away. And winning games, I'm not really sure where you want to be. I'm not sure what you want. Do you want to go back to, let's stick it up your jumper and end up getting beat? No, let's have a go. And sometimes it's not going to work. I'm being entertained and I'm being absolutely royally spoiled right now by all the teams.
Yeah, so second half started, Salford ramped up, Salford scored first, wonderful try from Michelle Davis, 40 yards out, steps the forward, burns the fullback on the outside in the field and goes under the posts. What a wonderful score.
Yeah, really smart, really. When I saw it, I said to you as well, I don't know if she'd offloaded it, it looked like there was two separate people going through, she was that quick and she'd gone through that gap and then, like you say, she came inside and the defenders were just like laying in wait, really. Brilliant try. Really, really smart play. I've not seen her before. I've never seen her play before. So it was wonderful to see someone with that kind of level of skill. But she tore him up right through the middle and shown a clean pair of heels to go through and score under the post.
Yeah, it's a moment. It's like last week with Alex Simpson stealing the ball. Chasing down the winger. It's a moment in a game that changes everything, doesn't it? It lifts everybody, and certain players have that, don't they? They're able to do that, and I thought that was sort of a wonderful, wonderful try. Alton hit back, though, with a try of their own. Kick to the posts, panic in the Salford defence. Alton attacker dived in the mixer, crashed over to make it 14-10.
Yeah, scruffy try, really. A bit messy. But they're the ones that sometimes are just unavoidable. You can't. Again, it could go anywhere. Anything could happen. One of our girls could have died, and it could have booted it. Just, it's what happens. I don't really put any blame on anything there. It's a bit of luck, and they chance their arm because they're behind, and it's come up for them. That's what happens. But it wasn't like a clinical bit of play, or they outdid us with something. It was just one of them things that happens. A bit of a scramble, really. And the thing is, you can defend as well as you want, but sometimes you need a bit of luck in defence as well, and that just wasn't there at that time.
Yeah, so we know following Salford Devils is a roller coaster ride. So time's ticking on. We trail by 4. Salford go for the throw, move the ball from right to left. Ball moved out to Emily Bagley. She runs at 2 defenders, carries them both over the line, crashes over to score and win the game for Salford Devils.
And again, like in the first half when we scored from the kick, that ball movement to the left was brilliant. We caught them out and outnumbered them really out there. I think if she hadn't gone over, I think there was still 2 players to the left of her that was an overlap. We just created that space with slick ball handling, really. And then she just charged it in and there was no stopping her from there. She was going over. And it's at that point, it becomes very, very squeaky bum, as they say, because we tying the game up. And to create that space, by the way, it's very, very clever, very hard to do, outnumbering teams. And to outnumber them like 3-on-1 out there or 3-on-2 out wide at that point in the game was really smart play.
Yeah, Michelle Davies kicks the goal. Salford lead 16-14 with 3 minutes to go. Alton aren't dead yet. They come forward again. Frantic defence from Salford. They kick to the corner. Ball bounces everywhere. They go for the corner. Tackled by, I think it was Gray and Simpson. Just about managed to stop her from going over in the corner. They thought the danger was over there. But Alton go short side and knock on over the line with about 30 seconds to go. I slumped back in my chair thinking, oh no, just conceded the death here. But didn't. And Salford are victors.
Yeah, and just stay in the arm wrestle, stay in the game as long as you can. And the other thing I was going to say before, actually, is I've said it a few times already, that this is a new team trying to blend, trying to get together. This is a big test early on in the season, in the league season, and we come through it, and we will get better from this, and we will keep improving. There will be easier weeks as well, where we're not quite up against that kind of level of opponent. So to come through that and stick at it in a really tough game, showed great levels of commitment, but the skill as well, like I said, some of the skill on show, the way we move the ball about is tremendous to watch. And I think as the season goes on, these things will get better and slicker. We'll get more bodies back in there, obviously, likes of Demi coming back in and things like that. I think we're on a good path now. We had a tough start in that Challenge Cup. We played some big teams. We're unlucky getting that group, really. So they get a bit of a break this week in a way. But they can look at the video, see where they went wrong, see where it went right, And I think we're set for a good year.
Yeah, his heart. He showed heart. And that's what, as a fan, that's what you want to see, don't you? You want to see the players giving everything. And you can't fault them for the effort. And you earn that bit of luck at the end with a knock-on, with the effort you've put in the full 80 minutes. And it was a great win for Mike Grady's ladies. Up to third now in the championship, which is great. Obviously, still plenty of games to go. We can still aim for that playoff spot. And then when you get in the playoffs, Park, yeah, anything can happen.
Yeah, well, don't stop at the playoffs. Go for it. Go for the title. That's got to be the aim. We are, you know, as a team and as a club, I think very much on the rise. And it's going to, obviously, it's a shame what happened last year and the girls that had left, because if we'd have had even half of them still with us, I think we'd dominate this league, no problem. So we're rebuilding, but we're getting these girls are going to get to that level. They're learning every week. Mike Grady's obviously got a different way of playing than previous coaches or whatever. He's put his own stamp on things. So yeah, why not just aim for the top, go for it. And I think you're saying there about heart, and that's something that I think Salford fans have always asked for. We know we don't always get the most skillful players. We don't always get the top players because we haven't got the money to pay that in any way. But give us your heart, show us what you've got. And I think that's why certain players who don't work at bigger clubs come to Salford and love it in the men's game, the women's game, whatever. Because we take that to heart, that you are just giving what you've got. And that's all that really counts. Anything better than that is a luxury for us. And that's where we are. And that's where the men's team are at the moment. It's the same thing. People like Nene McDonald, who left Leeds because he wasn't happy. King Muniawa did the same. Previous to that, the likes of Brodie Croft wasn't loved in Australia. Jackson Hastings, Tui Lolahea. These players come to our club and are loved and are wanted because they give what they've got. And it's the same with the ladies this week. That's exactly what they've done. They've shown that heart and that character, and you can't ask for more than that. If they'd have come off losing, they'd have just given us what they've got, and that's enough for most of us.
Yeah. So a double win weekend for Salford Red Devils. Much to celebrate and much to look forward to in the rest of the season. So let's see what's happening in the world of Salford Red Devils. So we'll start, Parky, with one of our ladies. Lydia Egan was in international action for Ireland. They played Wales in a World Cup qualifier in Cardiff. When we talk about playing internationally for your country being the biggest achievement, what an achievement, well done. Congratulations for everyone on the podcast for that. And obviously a new player for us as well come this season, showing us the talent she's got.
Yeah, very much so. Well, any chance you get to represent your country is obviously going to be a huge thing. I'm sure she was delighted. I'm sure her family were delighted with it. And like you say, another player who's new to us and possibly even new to the game shows how rapidly these girls are picking it up and moving on. Yeah, well done to her. Another Salford player getting rep on us. We can't ask more than that. The more the merrier. And I'm sure, again, this sort of generation of girls, some of them will go on as well to represent their countries, because we lost a few internationals last year, so we're gaining them back.
Yeah, and that's what it is, I suppose, where we are, the ladies team. It's starting block in it, really. And these ladies, I've said it before, are pioneers. In 20 years' time, we'd hopefully have a development academy full of girls who are looking up at these ladies and ladies who have come before in the first couple of seasons and looking at how what they achieved in a red shirt and want to emulate that. And I think there's lots of talk about women's sport and now it's growing all the time. And I think at Salford, we're doing our bit towards that. And I think it's really important the club continue to back them. They have, and putting the games on RDTV, covering the games on X. It's great, obviously, they are giving them the spotlight.
Yeah, very much. I mean, you hear now the female footballers talk about those that went before. And some of these girls now are full-time professional soccer players and they're earning fairly decent money and got great careers and great profiles. They thank those that went before that made this possible, and that's where we're at the moment. And that from a couple of years ago, Louise Fellingham and people like that coming through, and then this next year, they're the ones that we will look back on in like say 10, 20 years' time, when we might have full-time women's rugby league. You don't know, we might be at that level, and we'll be looking back. Do you remember when it first started? These people got it going, got people interested, got the girls of now young girls now interested in playing the game and give them the chance and open up doors that weren't there before. And the club, like you say, are a huge part of that. I know there's a big commitment of the club with it. Even looking at the travel, the coach, they get luxury coaches to go away on and things like that. 5 years ago, you wouldn't have dreamt of it. So where are we going to be in another 5 years? And these girls, like I say, now that are watching Salford more and more every week, it's amazing to see. These young girls have got a pathway now, and hopefully we can develop that and eventually have, I don't know, 10, 12 Salford girls, local girls, playing for the club at a full-time level.
Yeah, exciting times in the ladies' game. Very exciting times happening. Parky Supporters Trust had their annual general meet yesterday. You spoke to Paul Rowley. Good interview with him in the dog, was it?
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, the man's... I adore the man. I really do. He when you start talking to him about rugby league, Salford or other, he gets a twinkle in his eye like a kid. You see him, he's got his love for the sport. He's just in him. And once he starts, he doesn't stop. He was only supposed to be there a brief time last night. His wife's been away while he's been going through all this palaver with his contracts or with the Hull FC and everything else. She's been away. So he's been fighting his own battles. He's been cooking for himself and stuff. He's not happy about that. And so she'd come back last night. So he's only supposed to stay half an hour. But he didn't happen. He was there for a lot longer than that, discussing all aspects from what was going on at the club. And when I was asking him, I didn't want to go deep on the whole FC stuff. I don't want to drag that. It's gone. We've spoke about that. That's all been and gone. And we've moved on. I just asked him about, you know, it must be nice. It's a compliment in many ways that clubs that do want you coming in for you. Like when you come in for your players, a big club comes in, you're like, wow, it must give you a boost. And he said, yeah, obviously he's flattered about it. But his main thing was that he's happy.
Yeah.
He said, why do I need to? I live in Salford. I love my life. I love this set of boys and everything I've got here. He said, you get to a point in life where you're not always chasing something. And it's about being happy at what you do. He said, his lads are in college doing A-levels and the whole rigmarole of not being there and moving about. I mean, if he did go to Hull, as an example, he'd have to stay in Hull for most of the week, I would have thought. He can't be travelling back, training and playing and everything else. And that upsets family life. And if you're happy, you don't need it. And he's got, for me, I didn't ask him this, but I'm sure it is kind of the case. He has got a bit of a free hand at Salford, which I don't think he'd get at many clubs. Other clubs are kind of dictated by people above. You go to Hull FC, I'm sure Richie Myler would like to have his say on things. At Leeds, Gary Hetherington, people like that. At Salford, I'm not saying he gets his own way, but we all know how important he is to us as a club. I think he's probably the safest. He's got the safest job in Super League. Paul King and Bleasy and him obviously work really well together. You might not get that going to a new club. That's another problem. So he's weighed it all up. He's looked at what's best for him, what's best for his future. And obviously the club have obviously spoke to him and sort of reiterated what he's got here. And that was good. And then he discussed things about the video ref and how things have progressed, but maybe we still got a way to go with all that and certain rules he'd like to change. And then he spoke about players and players that hopefully asked him about injuries. That's looking quite bright. That's looking on the good side at the moment. Looks like we might get a few bodies back. So all in all, but it was just a great interview. And just talking to him, the people there, you're captivated by him. He is. You can see why he gets a team like that because he is a leader. As soon as he talks, you listen. You're glued to him. And what he says every time you go, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. He's no. I'm not sure about that, really. It's, yeah, absolutely. You're right, boss. And, yeah, he had us all in the palm of his hand last night. He could have told us that daylight was moon and whatever. It wouldn't have made a difference. We'd have all just gone, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. But just a great bloke. Really nice fella. Plenty of time for the fans, mingling and that kind of thing. And I'd love to sit there and talk to him for hours because I think he is captivating. He really is.
Yeah, and that's what you want. You want your coach to be an inspiration to everybody. And obviously, Parker, you talks about fans' perspective on things and how it needs to change. And we're not going in, shouldn't be going into games thinking we'll get beat here or let's try and keep him under 20. He inspires his players not to think like that. He inspires his players to go out and just play. Go and play your game. He talks about how he picks his players because they're good people and not be robots. And that's an important aspect of it, I think, that he can speak to his players at a level and they get him and he gets them, and then he can get more out of them because he knows what makes them tick. And then I think some coaches, like Richard Marshall, struggled with that for me. And that's probably maybe why he wasn't successful at Salford. So Paul Rowley come in and he found what made it work. And he's doing that. And he's, like you say, Hull come in, ask about him. But like you said, he's happy where he is. He's got a good hand at Salford. He's got players that respect him. He's got Paul King, who obviously works with him, gets him what he can get him. He's buying into the project. And that's the important part. I think, obviously, we're not the finished article yet. We're going in the right direction. But he can see the finishing line. He can see where we're going. If we were still in a bit in the dark regarding the stadium and IMG and we weren't quite sure what was going to happen, I suspect it may have been a little bit different. But to be fair, in prefaces with me in the pre-match, he always says, "Oh, you know, I got a phone call from someone. I didn't know what's going on, but someone rang me and told me this." I'm like, "You know what's going on. They don't keep you in the dark, Paul." So he knows what's going on. He's got eyes and he can see that we're a club going in the right direction. And that's why I made that decision. Fantastic decision for everybody. Fantastic decision for the club. Fantastic decision for the fans. We're all up again. We're all excited again. And we're going into the game against Huddersfield after a good win against Warrington, confident that we can go there and win.
Yeah, it's two things there, actually. One thing that you said before about when we train things on the pitch and it might not come off, we don't go into our shell. We encourage them to do it again. That's what we've practiced. That's what we're going to do. Other coaches sort of say, "Well, that's not worked. I've not got the confidence that we can do that," or the players will lose confidence in doing it. They believe in what he's telling them, and that's a massive thing. The other thing was that the Sports Trust last night, they made him a little presentation, a little thank you for staying, which was nice. Yeah, nothing grand, but a little sort of paperweight thing for him to put on his desk to remind him that what we think of him. And I reminded him, and obviously me and Paul Whiteside had a conversation as well yesterday about the good times that we've had in the last sort of 5 years, and he's been part of that, whether he was coaching in 2019 or not. He was part of that backroom staff, and ever since then, the great days we've had, the wins we've had, winning at St. Helens, winning at Headingley, going to Huddersfield in that quarter final, should have beat Saints in the semi at their place. Bit more luck, we do. These are memories that before the last 5 years, I've never had. You know, I've had a couple of losing Lancashire Cup finals and a couple of second division premierships. Not the same thing as what I'm seeing now, and this progress that's going on under him and what he's done at the club and the style of play, and it makes it a joy to be a Salford fan, and he's done that. And I think that's something that we need to reflect on when we do have a bad result. You think, well, yeah, but we used to get bad results every week or every other week. I've been through seasons where we might have won 3 or 4 games in a year. You're like, well, Now we're disappointed because we're not putting 50 on teams. What? No. We've got to be happy with what we've got. And he's brought that. And he's getting that out of these players. And you can see how happy the players are as a group. And that's hard to do, to keep a bunch of guys like that all sort of going in the same direction. So I think we're just so lucky. And like I said the other week, you can lose Brody Croft and Jackson Hastings and Tyler Dupree and whatever else. Yeah, it's upsetting. But you can replace them. Not sure Salford Rugby League Club at the moment could replace Paul Rowley with anything like what he's given us.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing, that Parker. He is key. And it starts with a little paperweight for your desk. It ends with a 25-foot bronze statue. That's the way it works.
I'll settle for a Super League trophy on his turn. he was just brilliant. Also, while I'm on the subject of last night, the meeting, just to say that big shout-out to everybody that runs that Supporters Trust. They do an unbelievable job. Last year, I think they raised £43,000 in a year. Now, in these current times, that's massive. And this year already, I think they've given the club, I think they've given them something like £8,000 this year alone in stuff for the gym, for fixing machinery and things like that. The club just will struggle to do. And these people are a small band of people. They work tirelessly. And again, last night I looked and they read out the accounts and everything else. And it's so professional for such a small group of people. So I'd encourage anyone who isn't a member to sign up. I know our very own Paul Whiteside is re-elected to the board Didn't even know he was on it, but yeah, he kept that one quiet. I was going to vote against him, and I thought I better not. But no, so he helps out obviously with the media side of things, and that. So that's good to see. But they are all very, very good people. So if you're not a member, it's £10. I don't know, £10 is £10. I'm not telling anyone what to do with your money and how to spend it. But if you've got £10, give it, put it in there, get a membership for the year. It all goes back to the club, goes back to the development academy, and goes into the physio and everything else. And it just helps the club massively at the moment to get through all hard times.
Yeah. And a strong supporters trust means a strong club. And like you say, Parky, it's £10. Alan tapped me on Saturday asking for where my funds were. I was like, don't worry, Alan, it's coming. Like you say, it's important. It's about a voice, isn't it? And that's what the supporters trust does. It gives fans a voice in good and bad times that you can say to the club, this is happening well, we're not happy about this or whatever. Everything's going swimmingly at the moment, so that probably isn't much of an issue, but you can still help the club by doing things for them or whatever. So I think it's vitally important. If you're not a member of the Supporters Trust, get it done and help the club. Other things, good things that are happening, Parky, is we're getting a new shop. Club announced it today on their socials, Quayside on Salford Quays, looking for a shop manager to run it. Really important role for me. Obviously, we talk about the importance of having a club shop and generating income for the club. I think it's brave of the club to go in on it. Obviously, with the current state of the economy and retail not booming, but it's been needed for a long time. And I think to be brave enough to get there and do it should be applauded. And now it's just about continuing to run it and getting the best people involved in it to take it forward.
Yeah, I mean, another thing, going back to Sports Trust briefly there, about the more members you get, it bodes well with IMG as well, because they want this fan engagement. And to be engaged with the club through your Supporters Trust is a massive thing. So, again, just think how much you're helping out us going forward. Same with the club shop. I hope whoever does get the job is an enthusiastic fan as well as good at retail, because there have been complaints in the past of people trying to approach, not the club as such, maybe at the stadium or whatever, and people not engaging, not really bothered. Can I buy a ticket for the game? What game? That's not appropriate. This person's going to be front facing, and our window to the world, if you like. So it is a very important role. But at last, a shop. I mean, it sounds like the most basic of thing for a club to have, but no, there's an expense involved, and obviously not just the staff member. You got rent and everything else to, and we need stock to fill the shop with, and so we need people to get down there as soon as it does open and start buying stuff. I know a big complaint was that when you order stuff online at the moment, it's like, it takes a while to come, and it's £6 or £7 postage and all. Well, you're no excuse now, have you? Just go to the shop and buy it. It's there on the day when you want it. Fantastic development. I know Paul King mentioned it on our podcast, didn't he, a few weeks back, that we were looking at opening a shop. There was something coming, but none of us really knew. And on the Quayside, I mean, great place. A lot of passing traffic. Obviously, the BBC being there, just the identity, people seeing it is fantastic. So I'm over the moon. At last, we're getting a shop that we can be proud of, hopefully.
Yeah, I remember the glory days of the shop at the Willows. Little shop there full of merch, full of trinky bits. Used to go down there on a Saturday morning. I think Chris used to run it at that point. Yeah. Used to go down watching the videos of games. People used to be honest, Saturday morning, it was always a flow of people coming in and out of the shop. It was doing a roaring business, really. I think Amanda was involved at one point as well. She was fantastic at it as well. Yeah, it's just an opportunity. And I just think we just need to congratulate the club for being brave enough to go for it and just go back yourselves now. It's in a key location.
Yeah.
People who want to get involved, want to be this manager, apply for it. They'll find the best man or woman for the job. And like you said, Park, I suppose it would be an advantage if it was a fan, but I just want the best person for the job. It doesn't necessarily have to be the fan. I think what we've learned in the last, say, 5 or 6 years is people who have come in the club and all diehard Reds when they start but they are when they've been there for a bit.
Yeah, true. I think to have a passion for the club would be advantageous. I really do. I think not somebody who just sees it as a job, not just a job. It's being part of this club, and this club, our club, it means a little bit more, doesn't it, than just somebody working in, I don't know, Next or Marks and Spencer. You're going to be that sole person that sells our club to people. And I think being good at retail is one thing. And I think somebody with a passion for the club, as well as experience, as well as being good at what they do, is going to be key. And I wonder how much of this comes from last year's sort of fundraising share issue thing. Mm. The money from that, how much of that has gone into this to have the money to pay a salary. You know, it's not easy to do. Somebody needs paying for the job they're going to do. And this money's got to come from somewhere. So I'm wondering how much of that's been put into. People are saying, oh, what happened to that money? Where's it all? Well, this is probably part of that, giving us that chance to open up a shop, to move forward, to get the simple things. And that's where we need to be.
Yeah, exciting times. We will sit back and watch the magic happen, Parker. So that's all the big news. And now we'll look forward to this week's games.
It's time for the Devil of the Details Big Man Review.
So we'll start with our reserves. They are back in action on Saturday, the 4th of May. They face Wakefield Trinity on the community pitch. It's a 2:30 kickoff on Saturday, so get yourselves down there and support Stuart Wilkinson's boys. We'll move on to the ladies now. They're in action. They're in nines action in Warrington, 5th of May. In their group, there is Wigan, Huddersfield and London. Games take place between 10:30 and 4 p.m. Parker, last season and the season before, the mixed bag for us. Played well, didn't qualify. But obviously, two wins on the spin. No game, no league game this week. So opportunity for maybe players to build a bit of fitness up and build a bit of confidence going forward.
Yeah, we can't avoid Wigan, can we?
No.
Yeah, we're going to everything we try and do. But the other two teams seem to be achievable for us. Huddersfield got fairly decent. I think their first division, that Super League team.
Yeah.
But you don't know. And with it being nines, obviously, it's a different game completely. And it'll suit other players better than some others. And I think one thing I've noticed about our team is that they are very sort of quick as well. Yeah. We don't have like big play, a bit like the first team in that way. In the men's team, we're not hugely in the pack. We don't have massive people, so it's actually going to work in our favour because obviously it's a bit more. It's all about speed, really, nines and sevens and that kind of thing. So yeah, it should be good. Good little festival of rugby as well in that way. So hopefully we can get through this time after the debacle of the last couple of years of the way we were treated as well. It'd be great to make the big day and everything. But yeah, just a nice break as well, I think, for the girls, take off the league a little bit. And anyone who's probably nursing an injury gets a week. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how we do.
Yeah, still not got over that, not getting that wild card. Still wake up in a cold sweat thinking about that. This season, though, We know how it works this season. There'll be no doubts on what happens. So the top team from each division go through, and then there'll be two wild cards to be picked for the finals day, which is on the 27th of July. No venue confirmed yet.
Yeah, well, hopefully it's the Salford Community Stadium. That'd be nice if we get there. If we don't, then you can play it anywhere you want. it'd just be good for the girls. Again, just building on confidence and that kind of thing and learning a bit more. I think this week, when they start playing it, he said, the way we play the game, I think it's really going to suit us. Because we are good at the ball movement is superb, and I think that'll stand us in good stead. So hopefully, fingers crossed, they can get off to a decent start. And who knows, we might be there on finals day.
There's not much difference between the Grady way and Rowley ball when it comes to style. Obviously, last season with Bates ball, it was more forward orientated, bish bash bosh. We go down the middle, we cause a bit of chaos, and we'll go out wide and play. This team under Mike Grady likes to move it like Paul Rowley does. So there is, I think, Paul King spoke about it, having a, like you said, you mentioned it before, and you're about playing away, making it the Salford way. And yeah. I suppose at the beginning of the season, when we were playing these Super League teams, I was a bit like, might need to rethink this. But, like you say, three wins on the spin, you're back playing in a division with teams that have similar ability to yourself, and our ladies are finding a way of playing entertaining rugby and winning. So it will be interesting to see what happens in Warrington on Sunday. Obviously, get yourselves down there, support them, and hopefully cheer them on to finals day, which is the 27th of July. So let's move on now to Huddersfield away, Friday night. Paul Rowley's men, testing game against former coach Ian Watson, in the mix for a playoff spot like us. Really, 4 point apart, Parker?
Yeah, very much so. I think they've been in good form, Huddersfield. They were unlucky against Saints last week. They could have, they probably should have beat St. Helens last week. Their own negativity cost them. I think they're a bit doubtful of themselves against Saints, like we've been for years. When we get in the lead against a big team, it's like, should we be doing this? Is this? I think that was kind of a bit of a, like I said last night, a bit of imposter syndrome in many ways. And I think that was their problem, because I think they won five on the bounce, something or something like that before that. And then they just got beaten by a point off Saints in the last few seconds, as Saints do. So it's going to be very tough. They're in really good form. They've got some really good players. Big, strong pack. Pace outside. I'm not sure what their injury situation is. I know they've lost a few for the Saints game. I don't know how many are back. Hopefully, from what Paul Rowley was saying, we could be a bit stronger. Even though we've lost King, we could have players back in our squad, which would be nice. Some of our injured bodies. So it's going to be a real tough battle. We seem to do well at Huddersfield. I don't know what it is about the place. We've got a really good record there. But this is a different Huddersfield this year, I think, than we faced in the last couple of years. So, really tense game. And for me, if I was a neutral this week, it'd be one of the games I'd really be looking forward to. Two really level teams. We're obviously slightly ahead at the moment, but they got off to a slow start. They've picked up since. They've been in great form. So, yeah, we can't go there with any doubts, as we've said. We've got to go there and think we can beat them. I don't see why we can't beat them. We've beaten them with a lot worse teams than this. So, yeah, but it is going to be a big, tough battle. I think the forwards are going to really have to tear into each other. A few of our ex-Reds are there. I know, obviously, Tui Lola here, Luke Yates, I think Harvey Levette's there, is he still? So we've got a few ex-Reds in there, so it makes it a bit more spicy. Ikehifo, of course, he's still there, doing a great job. Thought he was tremendous against Saints last week, by the way. He made some big meters. He's going to take some stopping. But I'm sure Rolls has got it all worked out. I've got no doubts about that. But, yeah, I think it'd be a really good game. And I hope people get there in numbers to support the boys.
Yeah, Huddersfield have won three out of the last four. They beat Leeds away. They've beat Hull away. Wise. We're the most offloaded team in the Super League with 99 offloads. They're the third most tackled team with 2,838 tackles. So it'll be interesting to see who comes out on top, whether we can offload the ball while then plumbing us.
I think the other thing is Huddersfield as well. Don't forget they made the semi-final of the Cup. Had a great run there as well. So they're buzzing. As a club at the moment, they'll obviously be very happy. Sure, both the fans will turn up. Sorry, that's facetious, wasn't it?
Says,
it's going to be an interesting battle because I think the two different styles. I think the way Watson plays is very sort of percentage based, very cautious, whereas we know that ours is a little bit more, let's say, fair throw ball around, caution to the wind a little bit. And I think if we do that, I think we're going to cause them a lot of problems. Because it's quite a big pitch there as well, which might suit us. But we've got to keep it tight up front. We've got to keep their middles really quiet. But they have got some good players. If they're all fit, Huddersfield have got a really good squad. About 700 players, I think they've got. Because Watto just keeps signing people. But yeah, I think we go there confident after we've just beaten Warrington, who have been on a great run, who are a superb team. So I don't see why we'd have any doubts.
Yeah, prediction time. Parker, don't forget, don't back Salford, don't get chicken. Keep that going in your head while you make that prediction. Make sure it's locked in.
I know, but you see, it seems to me that every time we go against us, we win. And I don't want to break that. I said we'd beat Cass, and we didn't. But I said, obviously, I said we get beat off Saints, we get beat off Warrington, and we won. So I'm a little bit a little bit nervous about making a prediction on this one. It's gonna be close. I think there'll only be 4 to 8 points in it either way. Should I do it or shouldn't I?
How about you on that chicken?
I want the 2 points more than I want chicken. But I'm gonna say Huddersfield 14. Salford 18.
Pack it in for the chicken this week. Good to see. I'm going to go Huddersfield 10, Salford 33.
Wow.
Tim Laffey with two tries.
One thing I've spotted though this year, and I know you went for a big win last week as well, is that we don't actually score many tries.
No.
I think we've scored virtually half of what Warrington have scored, who scored the most. I think we scored 20-odd tries. Mm. It's not a lot, because every game we've won, it's been fairly tight. Even the London game, obviously. Even though we do play this free-flowing style, we don't score many tries. And that's what worries me a little bit at times, that we don't punish teams enough when we do get on top. And Huddersfield are a team that likes to keep it tight. Defensively, they're really strong. So I just don't know if there'll be many tries scored. I think something like goal kicking could come in massively for us. And every chance you get to take two, I think we take it this week.
Mm. I've factored that in because normally I go 50. So I brought it down to 30. I know we're not scoring as many tries, but we're still going to be able to put a score on this field. That'll be a good thing. Three things before we go. I want to say a big thanks to everybody who's donated via the Ko-fi. Helps us continue to run this podcast, get the programmes, helps us edit it, helps us produce this podcast, which you're all enjoying, and we love doing, Parker.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I say it every week, I'm still amazed that people tune in and how many people do tune in. It's scary. I know, thanks to Dennis Riley yesterday, by the way, for a few mentions for us while I was there, giving us a bit of a shout out. That was nice of him. So if we do get any new listeners from that, welcome, thank you. And to the people who contributed financially and stuff, it just blows me away a little bit. I can't get my head around that, but thank you anyway.
Yeah, so if you want to be one of the Ko-fi Reds who help donate and help us run the podcast, you can find the link on our website. Obviously, we can't thank you enough for your support. Two other things, Parker. One, the Independent Podcast Awards entries are open. We are going to enter this again this year after the success of last year. I think as a podcast, we've continued to grow. We've continued to get better. And we know what to expect this time. We know what they're looking for. We can't do it without our wonderful listeners' support, because without them, it's just three lads and a laptop. So we will be asking you to lend us a vote in the next few weeks to get us over the line.
Yeah, and you know, obviously the more and merrier in that way, and the more listeners we have, they'll probably look at that and see what we're putting out there and who's actually bothering listening to it. So you guys are so important to us now in terms of getting pushed forward for these things. I mean, it's always nice to get nominated for anything anyway, or it's just to be involved, and we do it out of the love of just talking about rugby league, talking about Salford. But yeah, it'd be nice to win something, wouldn't it, and bring it back and show it off to everybody, and show that Salford is, despite being a small fish in quite a small pond, really, in many ways in rugby league, but when it comes to the whole of independent podcasts, I mean, there's millions of them, new one every single day. So even to be competing and being in there would be great. So yeah, we kind of rely on your votes.
Yeah, so it's just trying to find our best bits from the last couple of months. That's what we're doing at the moment, trying to find what we think are great. If you're listening out there and you remember a particular podcast or a particular moment which made you laugh or touched you, let us know. And then we can obviously look at that and put that forward to them. Final bit of news for us. We are now on rugbyleague.com. Run by Steve Mansood, Australian journalist. We are one of the podcasts on the mixer, being broadcast all over the world, and helping to spread the word of Sovereign Devils.
Brilliant. I didn't know about this.
No.
This surprised me. Brilliant. Yeah. That's excellent. So listen, rugby league 24/7 now.
24/7.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think I've just died and gone to heaven. Well, I don't particularly listen to myself, but it'd be nice to hear other people and what they do and what they think. Yeah, that's excellent. I want to wear that. So, yeah, I'll be definitely getting hold of that. And
it's on the website. We'll put a link to it so you can click on it. Thanks for the opportunity. We know we're able to broadcast all over the world. And yeah. We were kind of involved in something previous to this. I think it was rugby a few years ago, which went really well and sort of got our name out, competed with Australian podcasts, and it was a really good time. I'm hoping this is going to be a similar kind of thing. There's talk shows on it, there's commentaries on it, there's podcasts on it, lots of anything you want. If you're a rugby league enthusiast, get on this website and fill your boots.
Yeah, I love it. I'll be doing that. The amount of nights I'm lying there in bed not being at a kip. This will be brilliant. And it might give me a few ideas. You never know. Make the podcast even stronger. But it's good. That I'm happy about that. And Steve's a massive ambassador for rugby league. He always has been. So, you know, on Twitter and everywhere else, he's done a great job over the years. I think he used to write for Open Rugby or something back in the day. Changed his name to whatever it became. But yeah, no, that's brilliant. I'll certainly be getting all of that.
Yeah. So exciting times for rugby league podcast broadcasting, and exciting time for us too. So big thanks for joining us on this Devil in the Detail. Another great show. Parquet, we've had Paul Rowley's men winning at Warrington. We've had late drama for our ladies. We've had shop talk. We've had all kinds of stuff. We've got preview of the Huddersfield game, ladies nines, and Independent Podcast Award nominations coming in soon.
Yeah, another good. So it's been a good week, hasn't it? It's good fortnight, really. From the worry of a couple of weeks ago, where it all could have gone badly wrong, to where we are now. I think I read something before on Twitter where somebody said, "Is there a better time to be a Salford fan?" And there's not been many better times, I don't think. And I think I've got a sneaky suspicion that there's more to come. I think things are going to get even better over the next few months.
Brilliant. Looking forward to it and looking forward to talking all about it on the Devil in the Detail. So big thanks for joining us on this Devil in the Detail. That's been Paul Parkin. I've been Rob Parkinson. You can find us on Facebook, Devil in the Detail SRD. You can find us on X at DITDSRD. And you can find us on SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify and RugbyLeague.com. See you soon, Reds. Good luck. We'll see you on the other side.